What if I did a podcast about other people asking, what if? What if utter comics nerds, the hosts of Hype is My Superpower podcast, joined us? What if the three of us tried to find a way to talk about this amazing concept of what if all in an hour and 10 minutes? Because I have a heart out. We're going to answer all of those questions. Probably not. Right after the commercial break. I don't know what it's going to be. So what is the commercial? Welcome back. Now that I've wrung every last possible bad joke out of the what if idea to introduce this show, I'm Matthew, your host. I'm joined by Will and Steve, who are together the co-hosts of the Hype is My Superpower podcast, one of my favorite sources of comics information. And because the three of us, and as well as Paul, have been talking for a while about wanting to get on each other's podcasts again, we were on an episode of theirs. Will was on with me for a bunch of episodes about Falcon and Winter Soldier. Steve's been on at least once. And we wanted to get the three of us together again. And the What If comics just offered the best possibility, I think, because these are comics that are now coming to life on the big screen or the small screen with Disney Plus. And there's just so much to get into. So let me just start by saying to you guys, how are you doing today? And how are you feeling about this What If idea?
I don't know. It's great to be back, Matthew. Thank you so much for having me. This is Steve. And I don't know. What if there are more good jokes to pull out of this what if concept? I don't think we should limit ourselves to one potential multiverse out of the, you know, infinite terrible jokes.
This is getting,
you know, my dad pun game is very strong, so I think it's a strong possibility. Will seems to be quickly looking for the eject button. So how are we doing, Will?
Oh, things are good, man. The what if comics are so off the wall and interesting to me because it's like you already have an established comic multiverse, and then to also decide, well, instead of doing alternate universe stuff, how about we tweak one small thing and see what happens from that? Mm-hmm. It's very much Nando V movies. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So let's kind of start by jumping in there. Let's just start with this concept before we start talking about it in both comics and now TV shows. For you all, what does that mean, this idea of the what if, of the take just one small thing and change it and see what happens? What's kind of the appeal of that?
I think there's always that it's kind of like opening up imagination in a certain way. It's like being able to play with your toys. You know, you're able to take a look at, you know, just different things that could happen. To me, it helps reinforce this idea that superhero characters are more of like a feeling or an idea than a single canon. You know, you can change something, and sometimes something really drastic, like what if Aunt May died instead of Uncle Ben for Spider-Man? And, you know, you end up with characters that are changed on a very fundamental level, but a certain part of them still feels the same. You can put these characters in almost any situation. They still feel like themselves. And it really reinforces, you know, the way that superhero stories often actually work as these sort of larger than life and larger than a single story concepts.
I think it makes for really fun conversation. Mm-hmm. It introduces it's kind of like an easy icebreaker of, like, you know, you have someone like me who just bleeds for Spider-Man, and then someone says, well, you know, what if you took Spider-Man and put him in this different situation? How would he react? And then so me, as the quote-unquote writer of this what if story, I get to be like, well, considering his character and considering that you removed that character from this story, how would that change the outcome of the events and that kind of stuff? It makes for just like really fun sort of, like, you know, fanfic storytelling, I think.
Yeah.
To me, there's almost kind of a scientific method about it, you know, and that, like, often in science, you have a reaction, you're not sure what's going on, so you'll kind of one by one change different variables while keeping everything else the same to see what happens. I'm no scientist, and I'm probably going to get 100 angry emails for badly explaining that, but I think that's the core idea. And to me, this is kind of a similar thing. You know, it's like, let's take, keep most things the same, change one thing and see what happens. And I'm about to commit a comic heresy here because I know that the official What If line is Marvel. But I think one of the best examples of What If that I've ever seen, more the comic book than the movie, than the TV movie, is Red Sun.
In the DC universe.
Where they say, what if, you know, the spaceship that carried Clark Kent was just a little bit, you know, came at just a few minutes later and wound up crashing in the Soviet Union instead of in the United States. And it's, to me, it's such a great examination of what is just inherent to Clark Kent's, or to Kal-El, I should say, to Kal-El's character, and what is the result of Kal-El growing up in a particular environment.
Totally.
And to me, that's just a great way of getting to the heart of, like, you know, what does it mean to be Star-Lord, and does it matter who's in the Star-Lord suit, or, you know, all the kind of questions that What If is asking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, totally agree. And Red Sun is, I've read, you know, countless Marvel comics. Red Sun is one of maybe five DC comics that I've ever read, so I was really happy that you were able to pull from an example I was actually
that's
familiar
awesome,
with.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was funny. I mean, I've always been, in terms of the comics I've read and the shows, before the first Iron Man movie, I would have said I was a diehard DC person.
Hmm.
And I now, like, I know a lot more about Marvel because the MCU, and I'm much more a fan of the MCU than most of the other content that's been created for the screen. But yeah, my heart's always with DC, so I'm glad we have that connection. So, and well, let's get into that, though, because I know for you two especially, like, you guys podcast about comics themselves. Talk to me about how this idea is dealt with, either well or not well, in the comics themselves, in the What If comics.
So I have a working theory, and I think this might actually be true. I haven't taken the time to investigate it or prove it out, but I think that What If, from an industry background, came across literally as fan service. And a lot of their early What If stories came from reader responses and letter columns, because one of the like really unique innovations of the comics medium before, like, the internet and all these other ways to get to build community is they were able to incorporate, you know, receive and incorporate fan feedback and kind of publish letters as a way to create a fan-led discussion about the comics as they're happening. And it worked because they had space to fill and it's cheaper than producing two more pages of art or whatever, but also just it's a serialized medium and it's a way to keep reader interest, and it ended up being a huge success. And yeah, my back of the napkin math is that What If came from a lot of these questions that readers were story concepts that readers were asking for that they didn't want to do normally, but they could give readers a little taste of what that would look like. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I feel about the What If comics has pretty much been talked about. The other thing that I really like is that the What If issues are fine with going complete doom and gloom it's usually a What If version of a big storyline, like a Secret Invasion or Infinity or something. And so if they change something that is key to the original plot, then they're like, well, you know, if that never happened, then Thanos wins and so you know, Earth is destroyed, and then it just kind of, they're okay with completely just demolishing everything that you know and love about Marvel in the main comic universe. Is Marvel 616, and so I routinely refer to it as 616, but they just destroy all of 616, and then it ends with Uatu
over
being
and over,
like, yeah, and Uatu's just like, that's what could have happened.
And
good thing it didn't.
Yeah, and so you end up with this sort of like this kind of exceptional or chosen, you know, like 616 ends up feeling like this real Goldilocks reality. Like, this is the only way that it's the real Doctor Strange, like, I've examined, you know, whatever millions of possible outcomes, right. And this is the only one that could have worked. Like, it just happening over and over and over again, exactly like that. In my reading, there's three like kind of main types of what if stories, and one of them is like Will just said, the you know, for whenever like a big crossover event or other like large comic storyline ends, they'll give a little twist of like, what if that happened differently? What if the Avengers lost, you know, Atlantis attacks or the Infinity War, or, you know, just and that kind of helps introduce the stakes of everything right. that they're going through. The other one is, you know, we'll kind of change a core concept. So like, what if Spider-Man immediately joined the Fantastic Four after getting his powers and he wasn't a loner? Or what if, like I said before, Uncle Ben lived? Or, you know, what if Wolverine killed the Hulk on his first mission for the Canadian government? And then there's the third type of what if issue that's entirely silly. Like, what if Watcher was a stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
And then...
And I mean, right there in the comic book world, those things are... They're interesting intellectual exercises, but there isn't... I mean, we're getting kind of very metaphysical here compared to the show, but am I right in the comics, there isn't a sense of all of these are canon in non-616 universes, but that instead these are kind of intellectual explorations of possibility, not necessarily saying that this did happen in a different version of reality?
Or is it both.
The same kind of metaphysical, like, it all is real... just in different universes.
It's both. I mean, you never go back to these other realities, so you don't have to care about them. But they all follow the same formula, or most of them follow the same formula as, like, you know, the episodes that we've had so far of the TV show, of, like, you know, it starts with Uatu the Watcher introducing the concepts of multiverses, and he gives you a plot recap of how it went in 616, and then he acts as a sort of narrator to speed up plot along through key moments of what might be like a decade spanning story, so you can get right. to the key moments in what have been reimagined with this different factor involved.
Okay, interesting, because I feel like and this is, like, we can start to get into the show here, but just in terms of this concept, I'll say for myself, I was very excited about this idea from the first moment I heard about it. I've not read the What If comics, but I loved the idea of this kind of, like, literally just asking what if, like having this fun intellectual exploration of how would it have been different. I was not the biggest fan of the Loki TV show. A lot of other people were, and that's awesome. But for me, to me, it feels like it is somewhat fundamentally different than what I originally thought it was going to be because of how this is coming right after the end of Loki. Where it now feels to me like there's sort of a, because we're in the multiverse, that might be the multiverse of madness, quite possibly, all of these have a lot more reality to them than I think I would have first thought from just kind of the what if idea. Do you think that's a fair comment about the show and the overall universe we're in compared to the comics, or was it always in the comics kind of very much like we're getting here?
I think there's one episode for me that really deviated from the standard formula in a really cool way, and I'm looking forward to talking about that. How about you, Will?
I think I agree with you, Matthew, that the timing and the way that it's presented makes it feel like we're looking at other realities, as opposed, so in What If, it's not an established rule, but it's kind of like an unsaid thing that the worlds that you get shown in the What If issues never get touched on again.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're not canonical in that regard.
Canonical in that it happened, but non-canonical in the fact that you don't have to care about it anymore once it's done.
Right.
Right. It's not something that you need to add to your pocket of knowledge for going forward, and then 10 years down the line, oh, they go back to that Earth kind of a thing.
Right.
But it feels like the Marvel Disney Plus What If is very much, hey, we could use these guys later if we want to. Like, remember that this happened? Yeah, here's their origin story. So when we put them in a movie later, we don't have to, like, cover that screen time.
Right. I mean, at this point, I feel like if they don't put Halle Atwell playing Captain Carter somewhere in the on-screen MCU live action, like, they're kind of leaving a lot of money on the table. Right. And that alone seems to break what you're kind of saying of, like, if a character from one of these does sort of, like, cross over into the 616.
Yeah, and that generally just hasn't happened. Only because a lot of these what-if stories end up actually happening within 616 continuity and maybe actually fit and not just like a ham-fisted, let's just bring this person from the other reality into ours.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, they'll just recycle the storyline, but make it, you know, in standard presentation rather than what-if presentation. Yeah. There's also a long history of pulling characters from alternate realities into 616 when they become popular, but that's usually not from What If, that's from, you know, more longer form and considered delves into alternate realities.
Yeah. The closest version of that, or one of the more recent versions of that would be like Spider-Gwen and Old Man Logan. Both of them were, so Spider-Gwen was introduced in a Spider-Verse comic, and then Old Man Logan was introduced as a one-shot, you know, potential future kind of a thing. And then they were both so popular that they got their own series, and then they got brought into 616 for X amount of time. And then Old Man Logan, because they brought 616 Logan back, they're like, hey, we only need one Logan. And so they wrote him off and sent him back to his wastelands, Old Man Logan verse, and then killed him off there. And so, yeah, like the super popular ones do kind of end up getting their spotlight. But to Steve's point, they're introduced as originally just an alternate universe, current timeline sort of thing, and not in a what if title.
And, you know, because it's a multiverse and it's infinite, if you ever wanted Old Man Logan again, you could just create another one in another mostly identical universe. And, you know, so it's just endless. Yeah,
it's the ultimate writers get out of jail free card. Totally. You know, like,
and that's why I hate the multiverse so much.
It's obnoxious.
I'm going to agree with you there. And I revisit my episodes on Loki. But getting to this specifically, for me also, one of the things about the What If that was particularly interesting, and I'm curious to know if this is something that you do get a lot in the comics, What Ifs don't have to be ethical questions by any means, but certainly a lot of them can be. Both in terms of the, like, what if a character, you know, when they were faced with a hard decision and they made one choice, you know, what if they didn't? You know, what if, you know, Peter Parker didn't accept the responsibility, or what if someone didn't, you know, go back to save their friends or have the heel turn or the face turn, or the sort of demographic side of it, like, which is a different kind of ethical question, but I think also very relevant. You know, what if Captain America was actually Captain Carter, or, you know, other things of, you know, if way before Sam Wilson, someone had done, like, what if Captain America was black kind of a thing, or, you know, whatever those are. Is that kind of exploration a part of the comics as well, either in terms of, like, the demographic changes or the, like, when a character was faced with a hard moral decision, what if they'd done something differently?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's like 200 what if comic book issues. And so, like, eventually they're going to do something along those lines. Typically, at least over the last, like, decades worth of what ifs, they haven't done any of those, like, origin changing or character rejiggering explorations. It's usually a twist in the plot line of whatever they're referencing. Because now these, instead of having individual what if issues just out there, these days they're doing what if takes on the crossover events, because now there's a crossover event every year. And so they take different events from that crossover event and say, you know, what if this person was sacrificed? So in terms of, like, MCU, they'd be like, you know, what if Hawkeye gave up his life for the Soul Stone instead of Widow? How would things change from there? And so they don't necessarily do the whole what if Star-Lord but black, what if Captain America but a British lady. Like, that's not usually what they do now.
And it's not to say that they don't do that in comics, now. They just don't do it in What If. They'll do it in like Exiles, or
which is
where Captain Carter was first published in the comics.
Right. I mean, on some level, like, all of this is What If. You know, it's all what if a super scientist used their powers to build a military suit. You know, what if he, as got the Norse gods of legend, were actually space aliens and they did interact with our world. Like, I feel like all of comic books on some level, all of sci-fi, fantasy,
for sure,
is a kind of great game of what if.
Agreed.
Well, and so how do you feel about, I think, Will, you've seen the first four episodes. Steve, if I understand, you've seen the first three, but you don't mind being spoiled about the fourth.
Not at all. I mean, again, that's part of the convenient nature of the What If comics, right? You're not messing with my future, you know, knowledge or enjoyment of any storyline that I expect to happen. So you can talk all about this and I'll watch it and I'll get, you know, the exact, you know, whatever amount of enjoyment, and it won't hype me up or distract me from other storylines, which is a big part of spoiler culture, I feel like.
We'll do a specific talk about each one of the individual episodes, but just in general, how do you all feel like the show is handling this idea of what if?
It's okay. So when it was first announced, with the trailer of hyping up Captain Carter and T'Challa as Star-Lord, I was not excited, because it felt like just doing demographic changes, like what you had mentioned. And so I wasn't excited because I wanted something more like what I've seen in the comics over the last 10 years of, you know, what if Infinity War, but this change, you know, like there's 25 movies. They have enough material to dive in and do that kind of stuff. But they did that with episode three. Well, they did a lot of the scenes in episode three. And the way that the first two episodes have been presented, it's working out to be what I wanted it to be. And so I have less, now that I've consumed it, I like it more than what I was going in expecting. So I'm a little more happy with that. But the extra takeaways, that are implied through the storytelling that they've decided on are what stand out to me now, of like, if Peggy ended up becoming the super soldier, she's only going to go out and fight if we could put Steve in a suit of armor and have her fight and have him fight with her. Or if T'Challa got abducted instead of Quill, T'Challa just brings about intergalactic world peace as Star-Lord. Thanos doesn't become the intergalactic tyrant that he is. The Ravagers become peacekeepers. Like, they become more effective than the Nova Corps, like, just because they changed one character. Like, it makes Peter Quill's character feel so useless and like and just unnecessary. But we've already spent so much time getting to love Peter Quill and him growing as a character.
But we love him because he's useless.
But like,
yeah, I mean, I have never been it's funny. I think I love it. Number two, the second episode is far and away my favorite, in part because I think Star-Lord is an utterly useless, misogynistic idiot of a character who pretty much allowed Thanos to win. I have strong feelings on this regard, but I get the total point you're thinking. And I think the first two episodes, at first I found it frustrating because I feel like they're two very different approaches to what if.
Yeah.
But I think I like that because I feel, and this is kind of what you're getting at, Will, at least I hope, tell me if I'm wrong. The first episode is the events of the Captain America movie are somewhat fixed. Not necessarily, but like, and if you switch Captain America into Captain Carter, things are going to play out in fairly similar ways. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily the same. Red Skull won't get the Tesseract. Something else will be different, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of beats will be the same, and Steve will still get to have some kind of big role to play. I didn't love that part, but we can go into that. The second one, though, seems a very different approach to what if. The second one is, as you were saying, like, if T'Challa had become Star-Lord instead of Peter Quill, now everything is different.
Yeah.
Did you all get that same sense? Like, it's two very different approaches to this question?
Mm-hmm. I thought the third one was even more different, but we can get to that in a sec.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The... Yeah, I was really excited when What If first got announced, because I feel like without the burden of franchise and continuity, they can do a lot more storytelling for its own sake. Yeah. And, you know, you can go on these sort of like tangents, or, you know, oh yeah, what would good Thanos look like? And, you know, and that's sort of an entertaining sort of rabbit hole. And it speaks to this concept that is within the What If comics, which is, you know, you change one thing and then you look down the decades of continuity and you see all the knock-on effects, all of the stories that you've done since then. What does that affect and what has it changed as it goes forward? So I thought,
I agree. It's, well, okay. So also what I wanted from What If when it got announced was an animatrix style show you know, 6 to 9 completely unrelated episodes, completely different animation studios, like giving other names takes the ability to kind of make a name for themselves through Marvel.
And like they do in the comics, match an art style to a story mood and change, you know, change the entire look and feel of what you're doing based on that.
Yeah. And so, and then, you know, after these four episodes, it's like, oh, well, one, they're all the same animation studio, which Star Wars Legends is not doing. Thank goodness. I can't wait for that. But, and then, you have at the end of each episode, like, some character that is highlighted and can be saved for future. It's very heavily implied that they're like, well, they're still around, so we can use them later. Yeah. And it's just, I don't want it. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think one of the most frustrating things about most of the MCU has been when you can tell that there's something put in there to help set up something else.
Yeah.
And I know, like, even the writer of Loki has said that she was kind of frustrated by the degree to which she was kind of dictated to, because they needed to set up this multiverse stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I was very much hoping for that, for like 10, if nothing else, it feels like Uatu as a character is evolving and like is slowly deciding if he wants to become more involved, which that alone, like I wanted, like you said, like 10 different, completely separate stories, completely separate universes, even different animation styles, I think could have been fantastic. You know, yeah. And it's,
although each of these episodes is a different reality.
Yeah.
On the bright side.
Right.
Can I briefly complain about the character of Uatu, just as long as we're talking about it on the series level? Why does he have to sound cool? Like, he's doing the movie trailer voice, and he's in a world.
That's because they hired that guy. I forget his name.
They hired a cool guy. Uatu looks like a giant baby with a robe on. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and especially because
I just never heard him in my head like that.
And it's now been hinted at a little bit in the fourth episode, which I know, Steve, you haven't seen, but Uatu actually kind of like confronts Doctor Strange in that episode. And we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Because I know some of you listeners may not have seen the show, and we'll kind of give a quick recap of each one in a moment. But it definitely was him kind of intervening a little bit more, but also saying, like, I can't intervene. And it's, to me, anytime, I know we're going to ask this about the Eternals probably, we're going to ask this about, we should be asking about Uatu, like, if you are watching these terrible things happen, and you have great power, I seem to recall there being something about responsibility that goes along with that power, you know? And you always kind of wonder, like, I know in the comics, there's all this sort of stuff about how the Watchers long ago tried to interfere, and it was a total disaster, and so now they just watch. But to me, like, that's a great ethical question as well, that so far the show hasn't explored. And I really, if we have to have like kind of a plot arc to this group of episodes, that's one thing I do hope they explore some.
Yeah. So just on the, from the comics context of the history of Uatu intervening, because he started intervening almost immediately. Like, within his first couple, appearances, he was like, giving the Fantastic Four the ultimate nullifier to help them fight off Galactus. And yeah. It's like, okay, dude, you're not really serious about this. But also, like, I feel like there is an interesting take in the fact that Uatu and the Watchers in general are presented as so powerful that intervention is taking away freedom from right. the people they're intervening on their behalf. This sort of like transcendent nature mm-hmm. of the Watchers as, you know, and there's this sort of like attachment situation where Uatu only gets involved because he starts to feel this strong sort of sense of, you know, empathy and attachment to the people of Earth that is, you know, uncommon, and the ethical question becomes like, is it good to have that sort of attachment mm-hmm. or not?
It's also funny because right. Uatu is presented as the only Watcher that actually intervenes with the sectors that they're like in charge of, because the Watchers are an entire race, and Uatu is the one that we get for 616, and he views all of the branching realities from Earth and all the potential futures there, and so all the other Watchers do their duty handily. they don't get, they don't intervene, to the point where Uatu has a tarnished reputation among the Watchers as the guy that intervenes with his realities
all the freaking time, this guy.
It's so ridiculous.
The other thing about Uatu in the comics is that he has this like permanent cameo role. I mean it mm-hmm. really made sense for Stan Lee to be Uatu because in the comics they just like have him, you know, kind of like they have these individual, you know, like scenes in the animated show where you just see him in the distance or, you know, you see his eyes or a silhouette or whatever. Like he shows up to every major event and just hangs out. Yeah. And sometimes mm-hmm. he gets involved and sometimes he doesn't. But like you end up seeing him and being a lot more familiar with him in the comics, just, you know, from reading the big events, and then when he comes in and narrates an issue of you know, of What If, it really gives you this sense of, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. Like, yeah, this really could have gone a different way, et cetera, right. et cetera.
Well, and so we've talked to, I want to kind of now go to more a little bit episode by episode, and I think we're kind of talking about the first two episodes together. So just quick recap. The first one, Captain Carter, it's basically the idea is that if Agent Carter had stayed in the room when the events that were going to lead Steve Rogers to become Captain America had happened, that she might have intervened with the Nazi spy, and Steve would have wound up getting injured. She would have wound up becoming not Captain America, but Captain Britain, or in her case, Captain Carter. Kind of feel a little bad for the United Kingdom. They don't get their own name on the captain.
Well, because Captain Britain is its own
here, its own thing. But,
yeah, it's... Oh, okay. Sorry. you know, but and so then, and then, as you said, like the story plays out along roughly the same lines of, you know, she winds up rescuing Bucky and some of the others, going against, you know, she goes against regulations. They wind up having a big battle against Hydra at the end, which is now them trying to summon a monster instead. And at the very end, she has to sacrifice herself to save the world, and she comes back 60 years later. Pretty much the same story.
Right. Yeah. It was basically, just First Avenger, but with Peggy.
Yeah. So what do you all think of this idea that, like, stories are a little bit, not fixed necessarily, but, like, you can change one major thing, but the same kind of chain of events is likely to play out?
That certainly happens sometimes in the What If comics.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of funny that when she first got the serum and the brass were like pissed and they wanted to keep her like away from the spotlight. That was mm-hmm. that to me was a bigger plot point to focus on than, let's just insert her into the key scenes from the movie.
And how much How entertaining is it that Bradley Whitford has just made this entire second career as like woke white dude playing terrible white guys on like Handmaid's Tale and this and in
Get Out.
Get Out. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
As someone who identified most with Josh Lyman, it kind of hurts me that this is his career.
Yeah.
But he's having a great career with it.
Yep. He seems to be having fun.
I feel kind of like of two minds about it because, and this is more metaphysical than ethics maybe, but it's kind of related, I think. I do think that like every little thing that happens has rippling effects, you know? And to me, the idea that you could change something so major, but the story would still play out in much the same way kind of doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree. Mm.
But I do think that they were kind of saying something very important because I feel like the fundamental thing they were saying, though, is whether the gender of Captain America doesn't matter, you know, and that even if like all this. And so in that regard, I felt like, OK, I can see why you're giving us the same version of the story. I feel like that would have been stronger if we didn't still need Steve to be in a suit because she certainly wasn't in a suit in the first one. But
I feel like that's kind of an anti-feminist statement, though, in a way. Like, you're by saying that absolutely nothing is different. Like, I want to see the differences that are created by gender in this.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
In this situation, like, I don't think I don't like the answer that, yeah, we could have a woman as Captain America and everything would be exactly the same. What would be better? Not. What would be different? Gosh. What would be? Yeah.
But also, she didn't get the title Captain America.
Yeah.
She was called Captain Carter. Like, they dubbed her Captain Carter
and
not Captain America. And they did not put the stars and stripes on the shield.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so in a sense, like, we missed the all of the, you know, what does post-World War II America look like without this sort of without imperial hero figure?
Does Britain
emerge from World War II as the preeminent, like, you know, global hegemon and military empire? Like, you know,
when you said that thing about the what if going all down the decades later, that's exactly where my mind went to. I've been recently reading a book about the dissolution of the British Empire.
Yeah.
And how so much of it was this sort of sense in Britain of like, the glory days are over.
Totally.
We're letting it all go. Mm. And I mean, good. They're like, you know, they're ending colonialism. But yeah, that's an interesting question of if it had been this hero carrying the Union Jack instead of the Stars and Stripes, would that have changed national attitudes in Britain and stuff? And I feel like that would have been a fun thing to explore as well, you know, in a totally different way.
I mean, these questions could be answered in season two if they do a second episode follow-up, because the end of the first episode has her waking up in, you know, modern quote-unquote MCU. So, hopefully, ideally, they spend an episode of her exploring what her legacy was.
Yeah. Well, especially because, to me, one of the most interesting knock-on effects that doesn't affect this, but is going to have huge effects for the Avengers, you'd imagine, is that Howard Stark invents the Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
Which you're then so... What does Tony Stark do with him?
Yeah,
you know?
And also, why didn't he do that in the first
Avenger?
You had that in you and you just decided, nah.
As a hardcore Tony Stark stan, that was the one thing that bothered me. I was like, does this make kind of Tony somewhat irrelevant? But anyway, moving on to the T'Challa's Star-Lord. So I think we've talked some about that. And in that one, it's that T'Challa, as Star-Lord, is this person who has just a much more kind of peacemaking and negotiating and hearing people out attitude. He never really has a break with Yondu. He is able to convince, like, he's beloved throughout the universe, so that when the, what's the name of the character from the beginning of Guardians?
Udonto,
yeah. Like, that character winds up joining up with Star-Lord instead of seeing he's an idiot. Even Thanos, it turns out, like, at some point was talked out of his good idea, even though he still thinks it's a good idea. No one has taught him math yet. But yeah, so that to me, I kind of think that version of what if makes a lot more sense to me of one change has happened and now everything has changed. But
totally.
I know we can argue to the end of time about like what does that say about Peter Quill and stuff. But what's your kind of overall take on how it addresses this what if question?
I think it's funny that by making, I guess by making Thanos good, Nebula has hair.
Yeah.
I really liked that they didn't have Gamora in it, because having a good Thanos means he never shows up on Gamora's planet to wipe out her entire, like, half her entire race. Like, it's those small, like, off-screen details that I really liked. Or on-screen having, like, Drax being like, you saved my entire family. Like, little things like that. We didn't get to see Groot or Rocket, but I guess I would assume that they're still locked up on that jail, in that jail, because they never got inspired by Star-Lord to actually break out.
Right.
Yeah, it could be.
I liked this take, despite my reservations about making it anti-Star-Lord. But they also ended it on a cliffhanger of, like, well, that would mean Ego just says, fine, I'll do it myself, and goes and recruits Peter on his own.
I thought, I didn't know if that necessarily needed a follow-up, though. I think it part of the thing of what if is, like, well, if, yeah, then things will be different in lots of ways, and you can explore some of them, and you can point at others.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Right.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, that's what the comics
do. Like, it's the pond, it's the stone in the pondity. I mean, all, you can never explore all the different ripples and where it can go. Mm-hmm. So then we get the third episode, which the title is sort of "What if Earth's Mightiest Heroes Have Been Killed?" I forget the exact wording.
Yes,
but
the that's quest, not. Sorry, go ahead.
I think we're about to say the same thing. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is the what if of this episode.
Because I totally do.
The title seems to say that the what if is what if the Avengers were killed. But actually, we spend most of the episode with the killing of the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And we find out in the episode, basically, Avengers are dying. It all takes place during that one sort of Fury's big week when the Hulk, the Thor movie, and the second Iron Man movie all take place. Although Ed Norton has now become...
That was rough.
Just write you out of the entire multiverse. Thank you very much.
Exactly. But and then what we wind up finding out is that at some point in time, Hope Van Dyne, the daughter of Hank Pym, went on a mission, was killed on the mission, and that left Hank so bitter that he became a completely different character who turned into a bad guy who tried to kill all the Avengers.
Happens all the time in the comics.
Okay, that's relevant.
Hank being a bad guy is just... it's the classic go-to Avengers story.
Okay, well, I'm glad for that at least, because that felt very out of character for him, but I'm glad there's some basis there. But so then it ends with Nick Fury making a deal with Loki, who'd come to the planet to get vengeance for Thor, and then Loki is like, oh, but now that I'm here, I'm just gonna take over.
Yeah,
and so we end with Captain America being found in the ice and Captain Marvel showing up to help, and the sort of, it almost feels like that's where the actual what if episode should start. If the what if is what if the Avengers were killed, I think that. So, Steve, you seem to know, is the what if just what if Hope had died?
Yeah, it's what if Hope had been recruited.
Yeah, what if Hope was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent?
Yeah,
that's okay, the way but I see then it.
And so that kind of points to this being a completely different type of what if story, and something that I'm actually hoping that we see a lot more of. It's not something that I've seen much in the What If comics, so this is kind of completely new territory, but it's you present an altered universe in some way where things start to happen different, and you have to search backward to look at what was the point of departure. It's almost a detective episode.
Okay.
And I think that's really cool.
Okay, that I admit I didn't like this episode very much for a couple reasons, but one of which was I was having trouble understanding what the what if was. And part of it was like I didn't buy that Hank would make such an incredible shift. But knowing that does happen more in the comics helps. But I think that framework of we're going to dump you into the middle of the universe and not tell you what the what if was. You're right. I do think that's a very interesting kind of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I'd really like to see more, because it presents a lot of, like a detective story. You get to look backwards. Yep.
Yeah, I mean that was only that was literally said in like one frantic sentence.
Yeah,
of you know, she died under your watch. This is your fault. Boom, there it is.
Yeah,
right.
Hope was never part of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the MCU that we've been introduced to.
Right.
So that was cool. I like that.
And yeah. And it also, it's also a real contrast from, because so much of What If is often, you know, looking way forward and you see the point of departure and then you summarize on and on, you know, Uatu will narrate like a decade of continuity and then you'll see one scene of difference and then it'll happen, you know, a couple more times before you get at sort of the meat of the story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The real climax.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I think it also really drove home the point that pretty much all of Phase 1 happened within a week.
Yeah.
And just showing how busy Fury was, just literally just from Monday to Friday, trying to deal with all these ridiculous things happening all at the same time across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's super true.
It makes me really want to watch. Have you guys seen the there's somebody out there who did the Marvel Universe as a chronological supercut and turned, like, sort of reformatted it as a prestige TV show?
There's this guy on TikTok that's doing that. He's like he's going through every scene in all 25 movies and cutting them in chronological order. It's insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's get into the last episode, because I think, and I know, Steve, you haven't seen this. Will, do you want to kind of give a quick summary of it, the one that just came out?
Yes.
This will probably be, I think I'm going to post this probably in the next week after we're recording it, but we're recording it on Wednesday in the kind of early afternoon, morning, depending on where we are in the country, and the episode was released Tuesday night. So the episode's been out for about 12 hours, 14 hours.
Yeah, the credits were rolling for me just under 12 hours ago. But so basically, it's presented as what if Stephen Strange lost his heart instead of his hands in his origin story. And so Christine, Amy Adams's character, is going with him to that talk or the award ceremony. That he's getting recognized for some legendary thing he did. And so in the car crash, Christine dies, but he comes out fine. And him wanting to reverse that as a moment in time leads him to go and learn sorcery. That's kind of like the story. So he becomes Sorcerer Supreme, yada, yada, yada. All because he has this obsession with undoing... what's her name? I forgot her name. Anyway, her death. Christine's death.
Right. Christine. Who, by the way, quick thing, is played by Rachel McAdams, not Amy Adams.
Yes. Rachel McAdams. There's too many Adamses. But yeah, so he wants to undo Christine's death, and so he gets the time stone, and he keeps on going back, and everything he does, she ends up dying anyway. Kind of like... The Time Machine, which is a very interesting movie. It was also, someone also made that observation on the Panda chat, so shout out to them. So he kind of loses his mind because every single time he tries something different, she still dies somehow. Ancient One shows up and says that this is a fixed moment, an absolute moment, because it has to happen in order for you to become the Sorcerer Supreme. And so you'll never be able to undo her death. And he says, that's not right. And so he starts going down this like dark magic path. And just before he does that, Ancient One splits him into two. Are we going? Sorry.
It's a little more detail we need, but you can kind of keep going. Yeah,
so she splits him into two. And then we have a Doctor Strange in this world. We have a Doctor Strange that went down the normal Sorcerer Supreme path, and we have a Doctor Strange that has been jumping around through time and basically falling into the dip into the pits of despair and going the dark magic path and deciding that if none of these dark gods will give will lend me their power. I will absorb them and take their power for my own. And so you end up getting this like super dark sorcerer supreme, and then there's a fight between the two at the end.
Yeah, and most importantly, it ends with the dark version of Doctor Strange winning the fight, doing the thing to try and save Christine, and it wind up, as he was told, destroying that whole universe.
Yes.
And Uatu says that, like, the only way he could save that universe was to, risk destroying all the universes. So it's a kind of like, okay, well, the 616 is just going to be wiped out. So this is the, like, yep, sometimes it can all go wrong. And it ends with this kind of harrowing shot of Strange and Christine being alone, or actually just Strange. It's not exactly clear, but like him still being alive in this little pocket that survives, just feeling incredible sorrow, realizing that he just destroyed literally this universe.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Okay.
And I have some thoughts on this. And Will, I think you also have some thoughts for the capital T. Do you want to go first?
Well, okay. So it ends. So on the end, he creates that like distorted mirror dimension around himself to try to save himself and Christine. Christine ends up fading away anyway, and so he's locked by himself in this purple orb of mirror dimension. And then that's when the episode ends. So it's just like, oh, well, we can just pull him back from that reality whenever we want an evil Strange. okay. And so, like, that kind of ominous ending is what just, like, started this big picture for me of like, oh, this is what they're doing.
Yeah. And so I think this may be setting up some parts of multiverse that are going to happen. But I will say, to me, the thing that bothered me, and this is where just Matthew doesn't like time travel, TM.
Yeah.
Because I like logic in my storytelling. What can I say? But I think one of the things that I've liked so much about these other three is that they're avoiding the thing that I generally hate, which is this idea that, like, there are set points in time or that things have to happen. You know, it's that agency matters. Character decisions matter. And if characters decide other things, so much can change. Mm-hmm. And to me, they introduce this idea of an absolute point in time, which I just don't buy, but I'd be willing to buy, except for the fact that the whole point is, it's a what to me, introducing an absolute point of time in the midst of a what if, where we've seen that in the actual 616 universe, this absolute point in time doesn't happen.
Totally. Like,
because if the whole point is like somehow like the thing is that he decides to have Christine in the car with him, and so he loses his heart, not his hands, but they don't even let him decide not to have her in the car with him. It's like, once he's chosen this path, once the what if path has been chosen, you can't even go back to the original path. Mm. And that just, it just blew my mind with how logically ridiculous that was.
Well, so he did try just not picking her up, and then a mugger showed up and shot her.
Right. Like, in every version of the universe that he tried, he guys did everything he could. There was always something that happened that had, you know, he switched car seats with her, or he turned on his turn signal in time. Huh. There was always something that happened that caused her to die.
That's very annoying.
Yeah, it was kind of.
It's like one of those bad dreams where you know, you're trying to, like, you know, go do something, and no matter what you do, you just get sucked right back to not being able to do it.
Right. Especially because, to me, it's not only taking away their agency, but what this means is that, like, someone else always has to crash their car. Someone else or has to go be the one to shoot her, or has to be the one to, you know, do whatever. And it's just, to me, once you have something decided that this is a fixed point in time, my question is always like, well, then who's deciding it? And so I don't know if this is supposed to be the Time Lords who we just overthrew in Loki, or if this is Uatu. Like, isn't he the one who would make these decisions if anyone does? But I don't know. It just, That threw me off and left the whole thing a pretty bitter taste in my mouth. But I'm glad that other people seem to feel very differently about it.
So you bring in the TVA. I think the argument here might be that these things can all happen now because the TVA has been changed, or the one who remains no longer exists to keep us. Like, I don't think there's a TVA, I guess, has changed now that it's a different one who remains at the top.
Right.
And so these things are, these other realities can happen, but there's no one doing any pruning, and so they're just kind of observing. Mm. It's almost right. like it's almost like the new TVA is what spawned the Watchers.
And I get that, but I don't, because like we are going back in time for the what if, I don't know if this is happening before that happens or not.
Yeah, because time and realities are two different things. Like you can be introduced to a new reality, but it has its own history having now being happened.
Yeah, I mean, this makes me want to ask the question.
It's a hell of a grammatical sentence. There.
But what now is now, and that like the fact that those words are exiting my lips just upsets me.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah, what is now having now been happened, I think.
Because if you go to the past, then the future self, the past becomes the future's present. And
yeah.
It's yellow. I just don't want it. But yeah, you're right. We may have this be a... God, I'm so glad so many people are so excited for the multiverse. I feel like...
Yeah, good for them.
I don't have any interest in watching Doctor Strange right now because I so hate the way this is all happening after Loki. And this episode probably made me want to watch it less. Now I'm just like, nothing is going to make any sense whatsoever.
I think I have a different objection to multiversal stuff, which is I don't mind it on its face. Like, mm-hmm. I think you can tell interesting stories within the concept. It just takes up so much storytelling space that you don't have room for other things. Like,
yeah.
Into the Spider-Verse is fantastic, but yeah, it's because the entire concept is about finding, you know, the arc of the story, the character arcs are about finding yourself and people like you and finding community. You know, it's about this sort of like building of self and all of that. And they use it as a clever storytelling tool towards their, you know, towards their arcs. But when you've got it entirely, you know, you can also do it as the playing with your toys method of like very one-shot episodes of What If that don't, you know, spin off into anything. And it's just a fun, you know, thought exercise into how things could go different or a different mm-hmm. look at who your characters are in different circumstances. But once you start getting into like, oh yeah, this guy's from this other reality. He came over in this movie and now he's part of the team. So he's just going to hang out here permanently. And oh God, we have to find something for him to do, except he has no, you know, actual relationships with anybody in this universe. It's one of the most abusive types of, you know, comics continuity. And in my opinion, it most often leads to bad storytelling.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, all I want is good storytelling.
I think that's a really good way to put it, because I do love Into the Spider-Verse. And again, to go into the comics, you know, that shall not be named. I think that in the Arrowverse, the way they do the multiverse there of crossover stuff, of there's all these different Earths, but people can move back and forth between them. But the stories are set on one or the other. That also makes a lot of sense to me. I think it's the combination of multiverse plus time travel. Because to me, more than anything, it makes me feel like now nothing has any consequences unless they decide to tell us that something has consequences because something is an absolute point, you know? Yeah. And that's when you just lose me entirely.
Yeah, it turns, you know, your storytelling into basically arbitrary plot points decided by writing an editorial and not by, you know, your characters and how they would authentically react to something.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, we can ask, what if Marvel can somehow pull a cohesive story out of this mess?
I don't know, but we got there.
So having wrapped up that way with a bad segue, let's make another one. What if someone wanted to hear more of the two of you talking about books?
Yeah, well, we have this thing called a podcast that I think people listening to this will know what podcasts are. And it's called Hype is My Superpower. And Steve and I, it's basically me and Steve's weekly check-in with each other because we live on opposite sides of the country. It also works as our book club where we talk about the comics or novels that we've read the week before. Steve currently is going in super deep into this book called Gnomon that is wildly interesting and is unfolding in very weird ways. And I've had a lot of fun getting it kind of reviewed by him chapter by chapter every week. So that's been a lot of fun. And I'm reading a lot of pretty much only Marvel 616. And I only read trade paperbacks. And so that puts me about 6 months behind current. So I try to avoid Marvel comic spoilers as much as I can.
Nice. No, yeah, it is. I am well known for being a filthy casual. I'm not a big fan of comic books themselves. I love your podcast because you all, I think, do a great job of explaining enough that like I can follow the discussion even if I haven't read the thing myself, which is something that I think we strive to on this podcast, and you guys really set the bar on that. So definitely check that out. You can search for Hype is My Superpower. So I hope folks will check out your podcast. And then I'm going to ask one other what if question. What if you wanted to win an Oculus Quest 2 or a Nintendo Switch? Oh. Because if you do, here's a way you can do it. In September, the Stranded Panda Podcast Network that this podcast and my other podcast, Star Wars Universe Podcast, are both a part of, we're holding a review contest. We're basically asking folks to put in reviews, 5-star reviews, about the podcasts that you listen to in the MCU, and to maybe try listening to some new ones. In the Stranded Panda Podcast Network, to listen to some new ones, check them out, and write reviews. And if you love it, write a 5-star review. Every 5-star review you write will be entered as one entry into the contest, so it's getting like one more lottery ticket. So if you write one just for this podcast, great. If you do this podcast and then Animation Deliberation and then the book club and then the MCU cast, you get 4 entries into the contest. Ooh. It's going to run all through September. And if you want more information, you can go to the Stranded Panda website, strandedpanda.com. There you'll find all the information about it, and it'll give you a good sense of, you know, give you a list of all the different podcasts. All you have to do is subscribe, write a 5-star review, and you get entered, and you'll win either an Oculus 2 or a Nintendo Switch. As someone who's recently gotten into the game Fire Emblem Three Houses, and so now me and my partner are constantly fighting over who's going to have the Switch because I'm so addicted to this game. Our household winning a second one. I'm a Panda host, so I'm not going to be eligible. But, you know, I understand why people would want one. Even if you have one, get a second one. It's a great opportunity. And of course, you know, if you don't want to win, but you still want to write a review, let us know. 5-star reviews are great, but any star review is great because it helps us know more about how to make these podcasts better for you, the listeners. That's the thing that's always should be about. So even if you don't feel called to write a 5-star review, write a different one. You won't be entered into the contest, but still great to get that feedback from you. So please do that. And of course, if you want to give us feedback directly about this episode or any other episode, you can find me at theethicalpanda.com. You can search for The Ethical Panda on Facebook or Twitter. And of course, you can write to us at theethicalpanda@gmail.com. So, Steve and Will, thank you all so much for being a part of this. It was a great discussion. To all you listeners, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thanks so much for having us back.
Thank you so much.